The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Monday, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing very, very good. Hi, everybody. Are you ready for another show?
I am.
I got a great show. Democrats in Iowa. Some fun there. I love the... I was reading... I think it was Associated Press that was talking about... who was it? Beto O'Rourke was in a 5K marathon.
Right.
You know, for Pride... Pride. It was a Pride 4K marathon.
Yeah, something. Yeah,
right. And he was running in it, and the AP reporter was apparently there, and somebody said, "Is that O'Rourke?"
Yeah, right. They it's like they barely recognized.
It was
him.
Like, "Is that O'Rourke?" Yeah. Wow, I don't know. There's so many of them. It's like so many O'Rourkes. I mean,
well, it's funny because Iowa this weekend was pretty crowded. And I'm just thinking to myself, hey, can you scoot over a little bit? Can you scoot over? Yeah. Just let me make some room. And then what was it? Buttigieg was asked something about Biden. I think it was about the Hyde Amendment.
Oh,
right. It was. And he said, look, when you have a couple dozen competitors, Buttigieg, when you have a couple of dozen competitors, the more energy you spend, and by the way, this is a fair point, the more energy you spend on each of them, the less you have, and a lot less for your own campaign, which was a of course one of the easy way outs, easy ways out. So then I saw the poll where 9 of those candidates right now
at zero. That has to be a little disheartening.
And Beto's at what, 2?
I think he was at 2, yeah.
I mean, he was the new rock star. Elizabeth Warren is rising. Buttigieg is rising. Bernie
falling.
And Trump or Trump. Biden are falling. We'll talk about that one.
Trump is running in the Democrat primary this year.
Wouldn't that be funny? I've announced them switching to a Democrat. Oh, that'd be hilarious. The stupid post by Biden.
Oh, the friendship ring?
The little friendship bracelet thing. And I posted, I said, yeah, when your poll numbers slide, make a bracelet. I mean, that's it. Hello, Barack. Hey, Barack, remember me? Remember, I was the guy that was standing behind you.
And when I found, I said, somebody just did, when I found out that it was official.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
The Biden Obama friendship.
Yes.
Bracelet.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's just weird. By the way, Biden's people would think of that. That's creepy.
Could you imagine
friendship bracelet?
Could you imagine in 4 years from now, if Pence is running.
Yeah.
And he came out with a Pence-Trump friendship bracelet.
Ah! You know what Trump would say? Hey, Mike, go get on the plane. Reference to Chris Christie at a campaign stop.
Yes. wow.
Yeah, you've got to look at this and you got to say, okay, I mean, what are we... Now, a week and a half, or when's the debate? It's coming up here in a week, less than 2 weeks, right?
Yeah. It would be, yeah.
All right,
yeah,
so... Yeah.
Near the end of the month.
So
right after the IG's report.
Right. And, you know, the liberals can't help themselves. It must be fair, which means all 243 of them, whatever it is now, have to be on stage regardless of the fact that 9 of them are at zero. Here's what I'd say. Let's do this like Lollapalooza. So.
Wasn't the Republicans did. They had the big stage and the
yes,
little stage.
Absolutely. But the liberals could do it with, like, music. You know, bring in Rage Against the Machine, who was actually raging for the machine. You bring in, you know what I mean?
Raging for the establishment.
Raging for the establishment. campaigning for the establishment. They've changed their name. But because you could take Beto and Everybody Below, and then, of course, the rest of them go on the stage, on the big stage, on the adult stage. It's like Thanksgiving. It's insane. And by the way, we've heard this from, populists for a long time. You know, well, this person deserves and that person deserves. Frankly, this is the way it works. And I get it. It's insane to think that you're going to have 22 people up there, 21, 22 people up there on stage, and you're actually going to get any kind of thought across, except for what you said last week. Soundbite. It's all about making your soundbite.
Well, that's what's
not making a
point. You know, that's what you're hoping for. But what, you know, what gets you there as a, what gets you there as a Democrat, excuse me, if you have a zero?
Right.
Money doesn't work anymore. I was thinking over the weekend, as something we'll bring up, Representative Tlaib, did you hear her cash giveaway? Fox was all over it, and I'm like, come on, Fox. This is not a big deal.
Right.
And it's like $3,000 a year for an individual, $6,000 for a couple.
Right.
It's like, what are you talking about? Andrew Yang's at $24,000.
Exactly.
This is no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Made front page of Fox. I'm like, no. Yang already's got 24.
Right. Yeah, why
6,000?
Yeah, don't blink it. Don't blink at $6,000. They're not blinking at 24.
And she's not even running for president.
They're not even blinking at 24. We said that. Look, you need to combine them all. You know, the House, the $50,000 at 18, which you know what's going to happen. And if that ever happened, you know where that would go, right? Your family can borrow against that $50,000. Right?
Yes.
Or, you know, from the private sector, or Congress would come in saying, okay, we want to make it legal for people to borrow because there's a hardship. But you got to combine everything. So you need the $24,000 a year. That's going to, by the way, that's not enough. Sorry. Nobody's even talking about $15 an hour anymore. Forget that. We said that back then. Look, $15 an hour?
That's nothing.
No.
I'm expecting 50.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the next jump, really, if you think about it. And then you get to the $50,000 giveaway and everything else. You're going to have to combine all those and throw some more in. Free health care, free Medicare for all. The free college, and forget going to college. You don't have to work for it. We'll just send you a diploma. All you have to do is be.
Well, that would
exist for four years after high school.
But you know something, that would make college cheaper.
It would.
If you just gave out the diploma.
Yep.
You're not learning anything anyway. Just give out the diploma.
Right.
Make the diploma $10,000.
Right.
They would pay that directly to the government.
Uh-huh.
It would help defray the public debt, and you would get a diploma.
Right. Yeah, exactly. See, we're thinking. You know, remember, we came up with the ACCA in 2016.
Yes.
The Affordable Canine Care Act.
Care Act. And then we found out it actually existed. Remember that was the best part.
Where every family gets $1,000 for each pet each year to care for them.
Well, so I'm looking here and
jokingly, by the way.
Gillibrand at zero, Hickenlooper at zero, but then again, you knew he'd be at zero because he's the one that said socialism is bad, so he's got to go. Tim Ryan at zero, Eric Swalwell at zero. This is the best one. Bill de Blasio in Iowa at zero.
Why would you go? What are you hoping to build a one?
none of these is defeating nine of the candidates with 6%.
Yeah, not going to happen. Look, I didn't see, I'll say this, I didn't see the rise for Elizabeth Warren. I still don't know what's behind it because I don't see the energy there.
No, I don't. You and I, you know, we've talked about optics. She comes across as, I called it, I remember one time, I called it whining. You said, no, it's like pleading or begging.
Yeah.
But I know that from having kids and grandkids.
But the voice is sort of a whine, pleading and begging.
Yeah.
And I just don't think it's a good, I don't think it's a good style.
Well,
if you were to ask me, just as a political consultant, if I'm a political consultant for the Democrat Party, and I'm looking at it, I probably would say, I'd look at it and go, if you're asking me between Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris, I'd say Harris.
Yeah.
Just style-wise. And even she talks in a whine.
Yeah, right.
And then people are like, that's terrible. No, because we've insulted the men's styles, you know, style too. It's got nothing to do with her being a woman. It's just her style of what she does.
Right.
Doesn't matter whether she was a woman or whether she's a man. It's the style that she is using. And we talked about it at times. And the one time I played Kamala Harris for you, remember that? And mm-hmm. you didn't even know who it was.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. No,
who is that?
Because I was like, wow.
Because she was like, hey, well, I...
Yeah, and it sounded like somebody's grandmother scolding someone.
Yeah, that's what you said. You said, because you couldn't believe it, you said, whoever that is sounds extremely old.
I said,
no, it's Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
And our point is simply, optics matter.
Well, they do. We said this with Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
When it was going on, I mean, it's going to have to be some kind of voice modulation because when you're at a rally, you scream. Look, there was a guy that was rising to the top, Howard Dean. Then all of a sudden,
yeah,
and then he's done.
Well, O'Rourke.
Right.
The way he talks and his mannerisms are horrible to run for president, as he's finding out, is horrible to run for president of the United States.
It's like, I swear to you, it's like Napoleon Dynamite watching him. It really is. Someone's got to have already done the comparison. But it also sounds like Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad. Come on, Mr. White. Come on, man. Magnets, man. Because you're just thinking to yourself, And he's got the Elizabeth Warren thing going on, but it's weird. It's a different. He's not begging. She's the teenager that's kind of begging, pleading to borrow the car. He's the one that's frustrated and pacing back and forth in his room that you won't let him borrow the car.
Well, we said watching him when he even had the sound off with his hands flailing and everything else, it looked terrible. This is. When he announced,
mm-hmm.
and we went, this is O'Rourke. We went, wow.
Yeah.
60% of Americans, though, find all of the candidates on the Democrat side extremely underwhelming.
Yeah.
60% of voters. Yeah. We'll get to that coming up here in a little bit. The Mexico deal, this was really interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, if you want to get a keen understanding of it and wonder what happened on Friday, just look at the fact of the horrible employment numbers that came out.
Yeah, right.
You want to know what the key was in the president claiming there was, you know, saying there's a deal?
Yep.
On Friday, that's what it was.
Well, I think because there was the private sector numbers that came out from ADP on Wednesday, it was like somewhere in the area of 75 grand. And it was like, whoa.
Yep.
Actually, that may be high. I got to go back and look at it. But it was very low. And, of course, the numbers, the unemployment numbers that came out Friday, much lower than even anticipated, and they weren't very hopeful.
No, not at all. And they were not good numbers. And the president, you know, may have been tweeting out again the very profitable tariffs last night.
Right.
Everybody knows now he's BSing.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Right.
And, look, I think the president probably was on the right track. I think they were probably on the right track Friday of getting some, you know, negotiations in. I don't know. Everybody's claiming one thing. They're claiming it was all new. You've got the media across the board. I mean, whether it's the New York Times, Washington Post, even Fox, that, part of it, you know, that they believe it was the 6,000 was an accelerated number, but they were still on that path anyway. This was previous before the president ever talked about the tariffs. The third country where people could stay in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Foreign minister said that's not part of the deal at all. The president screamed about that and went after the New York Times for that one. But the foreign minister said that's not a deal. I think the president was on the right track. Then the economic numbers on Friday came out.
Right. Yeah. And I think there was probably a little bit. And I think the Wednesday numbers from ADP probably sent a message too, saying, look, if the private sector is doing this, because it doesn't include government jobs, but if the private sector is doing this, then this is not good.
Yeah. And the thing is, remember the president's original negotiating stance.
Right.
People forget what that was. Illegal immigration will stop or the tariffs will be put in place. Well, even with the deal that he announced today, there's no guarantee that legal immigration would be stopped or even close to stop.
Okay, I'm sorry. I knew that. I thought that was high. 27,000.
From ADP. Yeah. So the numbers came. So the president, again, he went for broke. Remember, in the tweets,
right.
Legal immigration will stop or the tariffs begin.
Mm-hmm.
Stop
mm-hmm.
is what he said.
And by the way, that was the lowest number since 2010 for ADP.
And so when you make that kind of promise, as we said, that's going to be tough to deliver.
Yeah.
And you had people taking both sides. His loyal supporters saying this was a great victory. His critics saying absolutely not. I believe it's somewhere probably in between.
Yeah, sure.
But I do believe his negotiating position now with the Mexicans are hurt because they know what his limits are. He has shown them his hand.
And he's played it fully.
He's played it fully, and they know what his hand is.
Yep.
And you could tell because he came out in a rage with the tweets last night and stated that the tariffs will be put on again, the very profitable tariffs. Now everybody knows he's BSing.
Yes.
He knows the tariffs hurt. That's why he backed off on Friday.
Yes.
It's that simple. I give him credit for, you know, being on the right path. I don't believe tariffs is the way to do it.
Right. I think he has negotiating skills far greater than any modern president. You know, some people give Bill Clinton negotiating skills credit, but actually, no, he was going with the polls, whatever the polls were showing.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff coming up here on the show today. 60% of voters find the Democrat field underwhelming. Everyone now is running from the dossier. We'll get to that. 12% of baby boomer business owners say that they will never, ever retire. And a gay man is the marshal of the Boston Straight Pride Parade.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
We're not looking for the real oppressive heat to start the work week for a good portion of the country. Your usual suspects seeing some 100-plus readings. Phoenix, southern Texas, most of the central U.S., the mid-Atlantic, and the northeast will be in the pleasant range of the mid-70s to near 80. We've been focused on the heartland where flooding for several months has forced many farmers to not even plant their crop this year. We'll see that flooding continue down through the Mississippi and portions of the Arkansas River for the next several days. Mountain creeks and streams will be running very high over the next few weeks due to warmer temperatures and increased snowmelt runoff in the Rockies, Sierras, Cascades, and most of the western mountain slopes. You could see spotty showers today in western Texas into New Mexico on I-10. Spotty showers up and down the I-95 corridor. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Yeah. they're guilty. Exoneration is not an option. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. He's Eric, I'm Gary. There it is right there, Fox News from last night. Trump raises specter of imposing very profitable new tariffs on Mexico despite deal breakthrough. And, you know, we talked about this, remember the original goal. Well, the original negotiating point was illegal immigration will stop or the tariffs go on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That it will stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then it evolved as it always does. And we weren't surprised by it. And we actually said when he initially put these on, what, about 10 days ago, or said he was going to do it, we said, okay, let's just wait a week because you have no idea what it eventually is going to turn into. And then when I woke up on Friday, when I woke up after my nap from doing the show and I saw the economic numbers, I went, okay, how long are they going to go? When I saw the employment numbers, how long? And it wasn't, you know, just a couple of hours and boom, we've got a deal done. And, you know, then I saw that Mexico was saying the deal is great and all that. And then we heard about, you know, the 6,000. And then I believe it was Saturday morning that the New York Times came out with their story saying, wait a minute, everything here has been previously negotiated already.
Right.
This is something that's already been on, you know, the table. I was like, okay, it's the New York Times saying it. The president's saying one thing. The New York Times is saying another. And then you saw people taking sides. You saw the Democrats come out and bash him. You saw loyal Trump supporters saying, no, Trump got a great deal here. And you had then Republican senators saying, no, we think the president at least was going in the right direction and got something that was a good deal. Then you had, as you got into Sunday, then you had Fox News covering it, the Wall Street Journal covering it. And what it seems like is for the 6,000, that was accelerated. How many, from what we don't know. That number hasn't been put out there precisely, and that's where Mexico's pledge to deploy 6,000 National Guard troops to its southern border was larger than their previous pledge.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mexico's agreement to accelerate the migrant protection protocols could help reduce what Mr. Trump calls catch and release of migrants in the United States by giving the country a greater ability to make asylum seekers wait in Mexico. And that's where you got to the other one. Where the president went after the New York Times, saying another false report. In the failing New York Times, Trump wrote, we have been trying to get some of the border actions for a long time, as of other administrations, but we're not able to get them or get them in full until our signed agreement with Mexico. Additionally, for many years, Mexico was not being cooperative on the border in things we had or didn't have. And now I have full confidence, especially after speaking to their president yesterday, that they will be very cooperative and want to get the job done properly. That might have been reference to discussions about Mexico becoming a safe third country, which would make it harder for asylum seekers who pass through the country to claim refuge in the United States. The idea, which Mexico has long opposed, was discussed during the negotiations, but the Mexican foreign minister has said his country did not agree to that, even as Mexican diplomats said negotiations on the topic will continue. Acting Homeland Security Director Kevin McLeman on Fox News on Sunday insisted all of it is new, a move that Mexico has described as an acceleration. This is the first time we've heard anything like this kind of number of law enforcement being deployed to Mexico to address migration, not just at the southern border, but on the transportation routes at the northern border and the coordinated patrols in key areas along the southwest border, adding that people can disagree with the tactics, but that Mexico came to the table with real proposals that will be effective if implemented.
Right.
So, where is it? Is it where the New York Times said it was or where it was the president? But where you have to ask what the president initially wanted. As the president stated 10 days ago, and we have short memories, but it was illegal immigration stop or the tariffs go in.
Mm-hmm.
People forget that was his negotiation, and you could say, okay, that was a negotiating point, but he got this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be a solid point. But the other solid point, as soon as They saw the economic numbers. Boom. Within hours, we've got this great deal that's done.
Well, and, you know, from the beginning, he was focused on these caravans, these massive caravans that were coming through Mexico. And the question is, all right, let's say Mexico does shore up their southern border. Let's say they get that done. 6,000 troops, and they're controlling that migration of people going through their country to get to the U.S. It's not going to stop what the cartels are doing. The cartels are using the whole asylum thing, the asylum laws in the U.S., as a distraction. So what they do is they pair families together that aren't real families. They flood one part of the border with them in order to distract, because they know the manpower from the Border Patrol will have to go there and deal with that. And then they send drugs through other parts of the border. My friend Raul Ortiz, the border sector chief in Del Rio, said this on Fox News just a few weeks ago. So this is not, that part of it isn't going to stop. If the caravan thing stops, I think that is a plus. There's no doubt, because that is adding to this massive thing. It's not a thing. It's a crisis. I know some refuse. Bernie still refuses to call it a crisis. It is a crisis. The question is, where's the measurement? Because, you know, the president, as you mentioned over the weekend, a series of tweets and said that he warned Mexico that if for some unknown reason cooperation fails, we can always go back to our previous very profitable position on tariffs. All right. First of all, not profitable, because the American people pay that.
And he knows it, which is why the administration backed off on Friday.
Right.
Which is why they stopped the negotiation and said, we got a deal.
And our trade partner, Mexico, knows it. So don't put it up there, even if you know it. Don't put it up there thinking they don't know it, because they do. So there's no reason to put that there. But beyond that, this goes back to the uncertainty on trade routes. You have to have those trade routes established in a big and very confident way. And if your trade partners are not confident, if your producers domestically are not confident, well, that's the political effect. The other side is the effect of getting trade deals done long term, any new trade deals. Because as you said earlier, you've played your hand here. You've shown your hand, now you played it. There's not a really great poker face in this game. It just isn't. Because all of the situations surrounding you is known by everybody involved. Every detail of a trade agreement, a threat on tariffs, and everything else is known by your trade partners, your suppliers, your domestic producers. Everybody knows what's going on. You're not just sitting there at a table yourself with some kind of ace up your sleeve.
Well, and the other thing is, because and this is where we have said that his the president's populist support that is pro-tariff is asking the question again. As soon as the administration saw that the employment numbers were not good Wednesday and then Friday morning after those numbers came out and were not good,
mm-hmm.
that immediately that they said the deal is done. And then after all the flack over the weekend, the president comes out on Sunday and says, If there is not, then we can always go back to our previous very profitable position on tariffs. Well, if the tariffs are a better position and very profitable, why don't you go for them?
Yeah, why would you not put them in place across the board?
This is where the president, we've accused the Democrats of believing that the people that vote for them are idiots. This is where we have said the president believes that some of the people that vote for him are idiots. Right. Because you keep promoting tariffs as something that's wonderful, but then you keep moving away from them. Well, what's the point? Are they wonderful or not?
If they're working, keep them in place.
Right. And since we all know they're not profitable, including you, then why do you keep saying it? Why are you trying to take a negotiating stance or trying to, you know, make a stance that nobody believes, not even Mexico?
Right. And again,
and after you on Friday, this is the political and economic point that I would as administration, because remember, even the populists didn't want to go with this. Lighthizer didn't want to go with this.
Right.
So you actually had the majority of his economic advisors, even the ones that have been pro-tariff in the past, go, no, because we're trying to pass NAFTA, the new NAFTA.
Right.
Don't do this now. You upset it. We're out there selling NAFTA, and boom, you threw this thing in there 10 days ago. So I think they thought this is the way we're moving away from it, and a little bit more certainty. Okay, all right, and this would be the last thing. Well, we get to Sunday, and the president threatens tariffs again.
Mm-hmm. By the way, it was the non-farm payrolls, the unemployment numbers on Friday, that was 75,000.
Right.
And they expected 180,
right,
somewhere in there. So far less than half.
And if you look at all the overall numbers for employment here this year, 160,000, it was 200 and something, well into the, 250, 260, 270,000 the last couple of years.
Right.
So as we see this year, as we move in down to the middle of the year, they're down significantly. They've noticed that. They know that.
Right.
And I think how many economic studies have now come out and said that the tariffs have defeated all the benefits of the tax cuts?
Mm-hmm.
So they know that.
Yep.
And so Mexico knows that. And so where does the president go from here? Who knows? My concern is there is no other choice but this president, as we have said on the air. And this is not political rhetoric. It's the truth. The Democrats and the things that they believe in are nuts. They're crazy. There is no choice. What can hurt this president? The economy. So don't sell false economic theories that you yourself don't believe. It doesn't do you any good.
Right. Yeah, don't sell it to your core that's cheering. You're telling them that it's a good thing, and when they hear that days later, you going back to that rally in Panama City Beach, the energy there was unbelievable. There's no energy like that on the left.
Right. And there's no reason to do what he's doing.
And so
you don't need to do that.
Yeah, you talk about tariffs, and they're cheering those tariffs. Now, look, some of them are cheering because of the energy. A number of them are cheering because they want tariffs in place permanently. But you have no intention of doing that. So don't make the promise.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Was thinking we'll talk more about it. Biden's flip flop on the Hyde Amendment, and even AOC came out and said, "Can't trust you. If you were forward at one time, you're not progressive."
Right.
So don't try to sell yourself as a progressive because you don't mean it. This is really now. This to me is the interesting thing. Will, for example, and I don't care what anybody says, she carries a ton of weight.
Yes.
As you can tell, Biden having to flip means it's what we have said all along. And we were criticized on this just up to a few months ago.
Right.
Where people would say, well, not all Democrats are progressive. Well, now they all are.
Well, the Speaker of the House, no impeachment gets called out by AOC. We might look toward impeachment after an investigation.
Right. As we've said, the party has been taken over by the far left of the party, and Biden's now 40-year, remember, 40 years he held this position and switched it like that.
Yep.
And you might have been able to get away with that as a Democrat 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, because that was just moving to the middle.
Right.
Now the left's calling you out on it. They're like, sorry, you're not genuine. You're not the real article. And so I expect this is going to happen over a variety of number of positions that Biden has held And I think it's slowly, you see now, I saw the RCP average, which is down to like 16 now.
Yeah.
15 or 16
yeah.
points.
Right. Yeah.
And it's still a lot, but it's been whittled, you know, in some cases, you know, almost half.
Right.
In a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, right.
And really in a very short period of time in the last 2 weeks when he has started to give opinions.
Right. And the rise of Warren and Buttigieg. So then, you know, it goes back to, all right, huh, who wins a primary and how? And then how do you center? I don't think they center at all. I don't think you can center.
That's a great point.
The whole thing with Biden is yeah. that he was already centered, you know, by relative terms. And standards.
By relative terms.
But then all of a sudden he had to jump far left, and that's not working. AOC says, no, 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 no.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome to the Red Eye Radio Campout.
You know, we haven't mentioned it yet, but...
No, we haven't.
We're not sitting in the dark thanks to a generator.
Yes.
But here in our studios in the Red Eye Warehouse, we lost power. We had a huge storm. Everyone probably saw all of the damage from the Dallas area that happened on Sunday as the storm came through. Very high winds. My next-door neighbor clocked his... he has a little weather station thing, and he said on his it read 85. I don't know if that was a gust, if that was like the highest gust or not, but it was, I had branches down, and we were very, by the way, very fortunate. My roof's only a year old, and I'm going to get up when it's, you know, when on Monday or Tuesday, I'll get up there and I'll look at to see if there's any other damage. We got a little bit of rain, but then you get into the downtown Dallas area, and even just north, a few miles northeast of my house, you had torrential rain and high winds. And I mean, some of the video coming out that was on social media looked like a hurricane. I mean, it was unbelievable. And then a crane, downtown Dallas.
Construction crane, yeah.
Yeah, this will be in the area not far from our flagship station studios, WBAP down there. And there's so much going on down there, but you see these cranes everywhere. And this crane, and someone else had a video from their apartment. They finally put they later put a video up of the crane actually falling. This crane comes down, damages an apartment building and a garage, a parking garage. And so as a result, very unfortunate situation where one person is dead. Several are injured, and the last I saw from authorities is they were uncertain about the parking garage, whether or not there were people that could have been trapped in that parking garage, because it's very unsafe to get into it.
It looked like four or five levels of the parking garage just collapsed upon each other.
Right.
Right.
And so I don't know, you know, logistically how they get, you know, that done. They're going to figure a way, I'm sure, but... you know, our thoughts and prayers for everybody that is affected by that storm. And I thank God that we were spared. It was, we had the thunderstorm watch pop up early Sunday morning for the area for the afternoon and into the evening, right? Very typical for this time of year. But this one coming through had cooler air behind it. This outflow boundary ahead of it was what that wind was all about. And it was pretty intense at my house. And I live not far from the studios. At my house, the lights blinked for just a second. The power went off for, and I mean, split second. during the wind, and then nothing. Well, I have family that lives not too far, a couple miles north of me, and they've been without power, and our studio here has been without power. I was unaware because I had not gotten out. I didn't. It was sunny after that. It became sunny, and yeah, it was a turned out to be a warm, you know, beautiful day after everything went through. But of course, coming into work, the stoplights, there's the traffic lights are all out. By the way, the rule is for four-way stop. That's it, for people who don't know, it's treated as a four-way stop. But the then. Of course, as I was getting, you know, as I was coming through, I was like, okay, there's no way we have power at the studios without the generator. I knew that we did have the generator. And sure enough, our chief engineer, Leslie, is here. And God bless her, man.
She's here.
She is such a trooper. I have known her for all these years. In fact, I knew her before I came to this show because I was at the network doing other things, another show. And I've known her since, well, May of 96. A true pro. Without question and without
exception. She's here to make sure everything goes cool with because just for Red Eye.
I said, you know, I said to her before the show, I said, well, I'm really sorry you have to be up here, you know, in the middle of the night. Nothing good happens after midnight, as our boss always says. And she goes, oh, well, you know, I mean, you guys are here and I wouldn't feel right if I weren't here, you know, and so basically we're to blame.
Well, we have lanterns that we walk around if we want to. Yeah. Now, our studios, that's the thing. Lit. We didn't even think about it the first hour because there's so many things to talk about. And in our studio, everything looks the same.
Everything's fine.
All the lights work.
Even the air conditioning is on.
The air conditioning works in our studio. I guess a couple of air conditioning units because of the wind were tipped over. So some of the other studios on the second floor were affected by it, and I guess the air conditioning isn't on in a lot of the other areas except for our studios.
The building has gone through the owner, the landlord, I guess, the company that owns the building has done some renovations. They put up new air conditioners not too long ago, and they've been working on the roof for a while. It's been going on for quite a while, but unfortunately, we just learned from Leslie a little while ago that the two of the units up there, AC units, were blown over, and that caused a huge hole in one of our studios upstairs,
right
in the roof. And so rain was coming directly in. And again, I mean, nobody hurt, and that's great. Everything else can be fixed, right? So that's not a big deal. But I'll tell you that it became frightening at the point that it wasn't slowing down. When I was watching it earlier today, I was like, okay, typically, well, you know, if you get a gust front or something like that, you know, it's going to last. It'll last a few minutes. It'll go through, and then you can see it. And, you know, sometimes I'll monitor radar, and I'll be able to tell where it is and how fast it's moving. Well, in watching this outside or just through my door, eventually I had to go inside, in fact, very quickly. But it became scary because I thought, man, this is not the typical gust front.
No, you knew it was going to be serious. I mean, it was. A lot of people said there wasn't a lot of warning. There was warning.
There was warning.
I was monitoring.
Yes,
I knew the weather was going to be bad when I woke up.
Right
now, it missed my neighborhood by about it. It went. I even knew about half hour before. I said, keep going east, go further east, go further east.
And it did.
I posted on social media, and it did. It went more east, and so it missed where I live by about 10, 15 miles. We had maybe gusts at just up to 25, 30 miles an hour, and then it died after about, you know, 5-10 minutes.
Alan was saying the same thing. Our associate producer was saying the same thing. At his place, they got nothing, really.
Yeah, we just got a tiny bit of rain. Not even enough to soak, just a little bit of rain, and then it just kept moving to the east. But you could tell, and on social media, I could tell our friend Hawkeye, who works at does the mornings at a great country station here at KSCS in the Dallas area. He was like out there with social media, just showing from his car. He wasn't even home yet,
right?
And he was showing how bad it was, and you could see a light pole just swinging back and forth.
Yeah.
He's like, well, and he gets home and this huge tree has crashed on top of his house.
Oh, man.
And he posted that. So, I mean, it was.
Wow.
And it was one of those storms you get in Texas, which aren't not rotation, not tornado,
right.
straight line winds.
Yeah, right.
And I know one time, it goes back maybe 10 years ago, I remember, because I was new in my house. I remember we had like 90-100 mile an hour straight line winds.
Right.
So it happens occasionally, and it's really weird because it's more like a hurricane.
Well, you know, and that was the thing I saw, you know, in Addison, Texas, which again is just as the crow flies, just a few miles northeast of here. And there is this, you know, it's a big, one time was a big restaurant district kind of thing. People go there on this main road in Addison and spend a lot of time. And I saw a video again. It looked like hurricane because they got much heavier rain. My house, the rain never got heavy and it didn't last long. So I was like on that line where the wind hit me, but not so much of the rain, but just a few miles east, they were getting torrential rain, and it was pretty incredible. I mean, I grew up in Tornado Alley, so I'm familiar with severe weather, but this was very different. We haven't had this kind of straight wind in a long time. I saw debris as I was out there as it was starting to come through. I went out again out back, and there was debris that was flying really high up, and it didn't appear to be heavy debris, but it was rare. You don't see it. And then I saw some other video being posted on social media, and there was stuff that looked a little bit heavier than what I was seeing in these videos flying through the air. And it tells you the power that this shows you the power of the storm.
Well, I apologize to everybody because Alan texted me. So before I left the house, he had texted me that the power was out.
Yeah, right.
And I remember thinking, I just went, just a quick thought, because I was running out the door.
Right.
And I went, oh, power's out. I go, yeah, but we got that new generator. Because it's a relatively new generator.
Right, yeah, it is.
I'm like,
yeah,
oh.
You're right.
I'm
we
like,
got it just last year, right?
So I'm thinking, it's got to be hooked up to the coffee machine. I mean, just I didn't contemplate. It was just a quick thought. Oh, yeah. The refrigerator, okay. Boom, I'm out the door.
Yeah, right.
Get here, no coffee machine.
No coffee. Oh, man.
I'll be able to make it.
Yeah,
I'll be able to make it.
I've got a warm Diet Coke that was in my backpack. I haven't opened it yet, but I'm good too. But, you know, because, again, you now I've lived in this area, and I mean this neighborhood, for the better part of a quarter of a century. And this is so far, to my best recollection, this is the longest we've been without power. Where a large chunk of it has been without power. Now, there was something that happened last year.
We're going on 12 hours now.
Right. About 1:30, right?
Yep. So it would be 12 hours without power, right?
So there was something that happened last year, and this one like historic road right off my street was affected, and it was weird driving in because I'd never seen that street affected. It's like the old money part of the neighborhood, right? And it was really odd. And I think that lasted until that went out. That had gone out about 10 p.m. or something that night and lasted until like 3 or 4 in the morning. But to the best of my recollection, I've lived here since the mid 90s. It's 24 years now. I don't recall.
Yeah, the longest we ever had was we had a transformer blow in our neighborhood last year. It was on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
And they didn't replace it till 2 in the morning.
Right.
Which meant by 8 o'clock you couldn't sleep in the house.
Because,
I laid out in the pool. I was like, should I get a hotel room? And I almost did it. And I went, just lay out here. And I actually, you know, put on some bug repellent. And I fell asleep on my lounge chair. And if I got hot, I just went and jumped in the pool again.
Right, right.
And all of a sudden, about 2 in the morning.
You're an Eagle Scout, man. You can do this,
yeah,
right?
I mean, well, and I also had, I've got the Bose Bluetooth speakers. I've got a huge lead acid battery charger for my car that has a USB port.
Yeah.
Plus I have my 20,000 milliamp backup battery for my phone. And so I had, the sound system was just going fantastic, and my speakers will last 16 hours each. So I'm sitting there and I'm having a party in the back. One of my neighbors goes, are you having a party back there?
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
yeah.
And you know, all the solar lights, you know, are on back there, and I've got a lantern and everything else. So it was, it was pretty cool. But I did go to the store, though. I mean, because it was just limited. I did go to the store and get a whole bunch of cold drinks and ice and an ice chest and all that.
Right, yeah.
But that was the longest, and that would have been about 8, 9, 10 hours. So
wow.
It's the longest we were. And it was just a I went down. I was able to find out what it was. And,
yeah.
You know,
well, in the nature of a storm like this, it's kind of like, and depending on the nature of a storm, like an ice storm can bring down, the weight of the ice can bring down lines, right?
Yes.
This is an older town, much older town, as many are, and an aging local grid and infrastructure for the delivery of power. So, of course, with high winds and branches coming down, a number of things. There's transformers, as you just mentioned, in that situation that you were in, but also limbs and trees coming down and taking lines down altogether. So our friends at Encore are working, well, a lot of overtime trying to get it up. I don't know. I haven't looked to find out when they might think. See, I didn't lose power at my house. I'm in this neighborhood, but I never lost power. And so I don't know when they believe that it will be back up again. But we're here. We have our generator.
We're here, yes. Everything's cool here.
Yes.
Even though we're just camping out with no coffee.
And Leslie is taking care of us, our chief engineer.
She is. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on summer driving. Your truck can face operational challenges in warm weather, so it's important to have a maintenance plan in place to adapt. Brakes are an area that deserves special attention. Combining hot brakes with a road that's baked in the sun all day can cause the brakes to malfunction and increase the possibility of an incident. With heavier traffic and more drivers towing campers and boats during summer vacations, you may find yourself stopping or slowing more than usual on the highway. Slow down and give yourself more space between the vehicle ahead of you. Not only will you be safer, but you can save your brakes in the process. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, coming up from the bottom of the hour, a couple things that happened over the weekend. You were keeping me updated during our pre-show meeting that California now is set to become the first state to offer health insurance to some illegal immigrants. The other thing that's out there, and I thought this was really interesting, is, and we never got a chance to talk about this last week, and the head of the DNC, Tom Perez, was confronted on it. The head of the DNC said on Saturday that a presidential debate focused solely on climate change was not practical after a group of activists confronted him on the issue. Remember, was it last week, DNC informed the Democratic presidential hopeful and Washington Governor Jay Inslee that it would not host a debate focused entirely on climate change.
Yeah,
and right. It's not practical to do so. Is this the first recognition? And we're talking in a decade of the Democrats finally realizing, okay, we can talk climate change, but we really can't focus on it because it's not something of concern to Americans.
Right, right. Yeah, it's interesting what will come up on the what will the agenda be? What will the platform be for the Democrats at the convention 2020? What will they be pushing? You know, you look at the list of things. Climate change is a given, right? They're going to talk about it, but how much of this stuff actually resonates with the American people? How many polls keep showing climate change is way down?
Way down. It's not something people think about. And it's interesting because the Democrats have just gone crazy on climate change all the way up to the right. Green New Deal.
Yeah.
And was that it? Was that jumping the shark?
You know what? That's a great question.
I just thought about that right now. It popped into my head.
Well, because look at the nature of it, right? We only have 12 years. Here's the Green New Deal. Oh, it's only a resolution. Even she said that. It's only a resolution. If it's passed, nothing will happen. Well, let's vote on it. No. Well, wait a minute. First of all, don't make it a resolution. Make it law. Make it binding. Let's, and then take the vote on it. If you believe we're gone in 12 years, then, and because she said, she kept saying, well, this urgency, AOC, she kept right. saying this urgency. Urgency? You're not showing urgency with a non-binding resolution. You know? I mean, again, did she know she was, well, that it might jump the shark?
But this is really big, because think about it. All the support of the Green New Deal now.
Yeah, right.
Join the Mind Meld, 1-866-90-RED-EYE. Back to Gary McNamara and Eric Harley.
And he's Eric, I'm Gary, 866-90-RED-EYE. So here's the story. Democratic National Committee Chairman Tom Perez on Saturday said a presidential debate focused solely on climate change was not practical. After a group of activists confronted him on the issue, it's just not practical, he told the activists. This is from thehill.com. Mm. After delivering remarks at the Florida Democratic Party's leadership Blue Gala.
Yeah.
Gala.
Yeah.
According to the Tampa Bay Times, depending on what part of the country you're from.
Yeah.
And as someone who worked for Barack Obama, the most remarkable thing about him was his tenacity to multitask, and a president must be able to multitask.
Mm.
The DNC last week informed Democratic presidential hopeful and Washington Governor Jay Inslee that it would not host a debate focused entirely on climate change, which has emerged as a hot button issue among candidates and voters. Actually, it's not a hot button issue for most voters.
No.
Inslee, who has cast climate change as the centerpiece of his White House bid, has been demanding that the DNC host a debate focused on the issue itself. That's it. No other issue.
Right.
He sent a letter to Perez last Tuesday urging the Democratic Party to ensure that the climate crisis is on the agenda, saying this topic required a full debate. Now, if you're from the Ocasio-Cortez wing, or if you're just from the Democrat wing the last 15 years.
Right.
And you've been sold climate change over and over and over and over and over and over again for the last 15 years, and you're a Democrat candidate running, and you say, hey, climate change is the number one thing because I've been told it's the number one thing.
Right.
Well, then logically you would say, well, we should be holding a debate just on climate change because this is about the world's doomation.
Another word. We just made up another word. Gimmeism, takeyism, and doomation.
Right? I mean, it's about being doomed. It's about the end of the world. And you had Ocasio-Cortez say 12 years.
Uh-huh.
Beto O'Rourke came out just a couple of weeks ago and said 10 years.
Right.
And now it seems to be 10 years we need to do something, or they move from that we're doomed in 10 years till if we don't do something, it's irreversible.
Yes.
We get to
right.
the irreversible part of it within
right.
10 years now.
Right.
That's where we're at. Well, that would seem to be a pretty big deal if the Democrats are concerned with it. It's the same thing you said up to Ocasio-Cortez. Well, wait a minute. If it's so urgent, why are you just giving a outline or
right.
a...
Yeah. Suggestion. Let's start a... Remember the beginning of it. Let's start a conversation. We've been having this conversation for a long time. If you say it's, and remember she got on, I think it was on one of her Twitter feed live things where she was saying there's no sense of urgency. There's no sense of urgency. And we called her out and we said, wait a minute. There's no sense of urgency from you because your team, your party doesn't even want to vote on a non-binding resolution. Where's the sense of urgency?
Listen to Perez here. Listen how he tries to change the topic. He, when asked about the rejection after speaking at the Florida Democratic Party's largest fundraiser, Perez stressed that each debate will cover a wide range of issues. He added that once you have a single-issue debate, then every debate leads to becoming a single-issue debate in order to address the concerns. Mm. Except you guys are the ones that have said climate change is the number one problem.
Right.
A lot of people say we should have a single debate focused on climate change. I've heard folks very concerned about the trigger finger guy known as John Bolton, who's going to bring us into a war with Iran, who say while foreign policy might be number 12 on people's list, Donald Trump might try to get us into a war in order to re-election, to win re-election. So he gets completely off the topic.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Completely. Like a 90-degree turn.
Right. Just let me just I can't answer the question, so I'll attack Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Why will, if look, Democrats, if you're listening to us and you're a climate change fanatic, we're right, right?
Yes.
This has been the number one issue from Democrats. We know, because in the Obama administration, there were only two topics that mattered: climate change and race.
Yeah. Right.
We talked about it so many times, how the Democrats, we actually said, we actually believed that Democrats actually had a philosophy that said, well, let's be mega concerned about things that people don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we show this passion for things that aren't even on people's radar, we can't hurt our position, but we can't help our position. We don't do any damage,
right?
Because nobody really cares about it. Oh, they're really passionate about that. That's good to see. I don't care. But it's been the Democrats' number one issue for the last 15 years. Probably, I could say 20 years safely, because remember, it's when you had back in 2019 is when Gore had finally, well, not in 2019, but in his campaign 2010, for 2000,
yeah,
where he finally admitted that he lied.
Right.
About ethanol, and
that would have
been in 98, 99.
He admitted that in 2010 about his campaign in 2000, yes.
Right, that his campaign in 2000, he lied about ethanol. Ethanol's actually bad, but he lied because he needed to get the farmers behind him because he wanted to be president of the United States. So it's been a full 20 years. The whole climate change thing has been for 20 years the number one topic of Democrats. And now, naturally, you're going to have Democrats, some Democrats, especially the AOC wing, who now have come up with the Green New Deal. And by the way, she's down to $10 trillion, I think.
Hmm.
I think she came, I think she said, well, we at least need to spend $10 trillion on it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not $90 trillion, but if a Democrat says $10 trillion, it'll be $90
trillion, yeah.
But it's the Democrats that have promoted this. This is the kind of infighting that's going on now. This is the kind of infighting they're going to... Once you get behind something, then they think they can back off it? You've just said... You've said for 20 years climate change is the problem. An entire generation. Ocasio-Cortez was what? 8 years old?
Yeah, right.
So her whole life, that's all she's heard. When you look at all these young Democrats who are running for president right now.
Fully indoctrinated.
A lot of them were in their teens or just early 20s. And so for the last two decades, that's all they've heard from the party that they support is climate change is the number one problem. Now, a significant portion of them running with 0% of the actual support of the Democrat Party are screaming to be able to bring up climate change.
It's funny because Hillary lied to them, too. They took her for her word, because it was. I mean, you go back to Al Gore in 89, right, as a lawmaker. But then throughout the 90s in the Clinton administration, I mean, it became more and more. There was this whole global warming thing that started. But 2000 really. It culminated, I guess, or got kick-started in 2000 with the Gore campaign.
Jay Inslee said last week the DNC's decision amounted to silencing the voices of Democratic activists. Many of our progressive partner organizations and nearly half of the Democratic presidential field. Democratic voters say that climate change is their top issue. The Democratic National Committee must listen to the grassroots of the party. A spokesman for Inslee said in a statement on Saturday that Perez's argument diminished the organizing effort of our partner progressive organizations who have been demanding a climate debate.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Democrats won't have it. This is part of the split, though. This goes on with, you know, they promote something for the longest time, and then when the young people who they've indoctrinated scream that, yeah, we believe it is our biggest problem, well, no, it's just actually a political thing we've been throwing out there.
Right.
It's really crap.
Right.
You know, sorry you believed us, but no, it's not actually worth a debate.
Well, and again, you mentioned it was the Green New Deal jumping the shark.
Yeah.
Well, a number of them, I think, knew it was jumping the shark, which is, first of all, why you do a resolution and not anything binding. They knew that it was that if we were to have the real discussion, that it would fall apart. You can't have a debate. They've never really had the debate. They haven't. That's been a one-way street. You know, Miles O'Brien years ago. I'll never forget Miles O'Brien, reporter on CNN. Well, the consensus is in. Nobody's even debating it anymore. This was years ago. No, false. So. Again, forget what we say. Ask yourself, why aren't they having the debate?
You know what you should have said? Why do we need a debate? There's a consensus. We all agree.
Exactly. Well, and that's it, because the consensus is in was really the those are the talking points and have been for years. Where did that go? Well, I'll tell you where it went. People are getting tired of it. They're getting tired of it.
Well, whenever they brought up, during the Obama administration, how many times did we bring out the surveys as Obama was talking climate change and race, and you looked at the concerns of the American people, and climate change and race were at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's why we really came up with the theory that the Democrats must be thinking, if we are passionate about things that people don't care about, we can't hurt our position.
Right.
Can't help it, but we can't hurt our position. Because people say, oh, look, they care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I don't care what they're talking about, but at least they care. They care about something that I don't care about, which may make them more caring, but I really don't care.
We're the station that cares.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. California is set to become the first state to offer health insurance to some illegal immigrants. California lawmakers have this out yesterday from California. California lawmakers have agreed to a budget deal that would make it the first state to offer health insurance benefits to some adults living in the U.S. illegally. The benefits were included in an expansive plan focused on how California will spend $213 billion of state and federal tax money over the next year.
Wow.
The Associated Press reported Democrats in the state legislature reportedly agreed to a broad plan on Sunday afternoon. The budget agreement must be approved by the full state legislature before it can be officially enacted. Lawmakers under California law must enact the budget by midnight on June 15th. The agreement would allow low-income undocumented immigrants between the ages of 19 and 25 to be eligible for California's Medicaid program.
So I think it was last year they passed a law that covered coverage through their state program for illegals ages 1 to 19. So this would now take it from 19, or I guess 1 through 18, but on your 19th birthday, you would lose it. Then 19, this one expands that now to cover illegals between the ages of 19 and 25. According to Fox News, that the price tag on this part of it alone is $100
billion. $100
million. $100
million? $100
million. Okay, that may have been a misprint that I read earlier. And maybe they were doing that over a period of years. I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and see their math. The plan, as you, or the budget, as you mentioned, $213 billion total. Where do you stop with things like this in a state or states that are having trouble with their budgets? They're not Illinois. California is not Illinois. But how long can you sustain something like this?
They would bring back the individual mandate on a state level to pay for it. They would tax individuals who do not pay for health insurance in order to pay for part of it.
Yeah.
Not all of it, but for part of it.
Yeah. Well, again, just the nature of it, the idea, the spirit of it. What do the people of California think? I mean, they keep voting for the same legislators that are enacting, the policy that protects illegals. They have sanctuary state policy in California. So where's the opposition to something like this?
As long as there's no federal money in it, it's up to them then.
Right.
If it comes strictly from state money, that's their option.
Right.
If there's federal money involved in it, now, I know as when I said earlier, because they reported in the Hill that the entire budget is spending state and federal money, but they did not say that federal money went for this particular. I'm sure it goes for the Medicaid program. I don't believe it goes. I would be surprised if it goes to the 90,000 people who will qualify for the program illegally in the state of California.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866 and the world, 866-90 Red Eye. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, because you can podcast us.
You can, not in North Korea, but you can. I was reading Washington.
Yes, you were.
Washington Examiner. Let me see if I can pull this up.
Boy, you had to sneak that story didn't you? No. Because I wouldn't have. You told me in our pre-show meeting, and I just didn't think about it again, but it is really an interesting story. And to theorize what's really going on
in
North Korea.
With North Korea, what life is like. But here's the Twitter post on Washington Examiner's website that has, of course, the link to the story. But their post reads, North Korea is an enigma at many levels. The Hermit Kingdom is famous for being a land without internet. But it's also a place where cyber activism on behalf of freedom is being pioneered. The answer to that enigma, the flash drive. And it has just a, like a generic photo of a handful of flash drives here. But I said to you, well, wait a minute. I mean, given Kim Jong-un and what he's willing to do to, well, members of his own family, if it is true, I mean, if you're talking about essentially it's not necessarily propaganda, but you're acting against the government. Mm-hmm. You're acting against a dictator here, which would mean that you're willing to risk your life for freedom. We have seen that before.
Well, are they talking about? I remember when I was in high school, and one of my professors that I had in high school, doctor, not a professor, but a teacher, but Dr. Charles C. Marlack.
Right.
And he always used to go. And whenever, and by the way, I mentioned him one time, and somebody had him for a teacher who was listening to the show.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. You had him. And they said it was right on, you know, with him the way that he was. But he was near retirement age when I had him, but the coolest guy ever. Short little guy who just was the coolest teacher you could possibly ever have, who had on the perfect suit every single... You would think he'd be the kind of teacher that you would mock.
Right.
Because he was older and in the perfect suit. And he was the coolest guy you'd ever meet.
Right.
And you knew it as soon as you met him. But he used to go on educational tours of the former Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to sneak in magazines to the other professors because they didn't have them.
Right.
And I'm wondering, is that what they're talking about on the hard drive, that people share, flash drives with each other that come from other places so they can read newspapers? Because if you don't have the internet or the internet is watched, then your news can come from exchanging flash drives.
Right. And it's as they, you know, right here in the Washington Examiner, that it is about getting a glimpse into the outside world. It's prohibited, clearly, but many of the citizens have devices with jump drives, so they can use these devices. And I there was a CIA officer one time that told me about North Korea and getting information from maybe someone in, you know, the Korean forces, North Korean forces, somebody with any government information. One of the things that they would respond to in terms of payment was porn. I didn't ask questions beyond that, because really,
exactly.
I mean, I get it, but I mean, I don't know what in what form. But the point being is that. Okay. I wondered how much of, you know, speaking of the CIA, how much would be propaganda? Because it's not necessarily propaganda if you just fill a bunch of flash drives on with a bunch of, like, recent Google stories, right?
Right.
About anything and everything, a number of things, cultural, entertainment. I mean, we know Kim Jong-un is very active. With the internet, he is, in fact, they believe, I think they know now, that the ransomware, a lot of the ransomware is being driven and being controlled by North Korea. I have someone very close to me whose company was affected by that. The FBI told them directly, this we know for a fact this came from North Korea. It's not that they don't really, I guess, they're not aware of it. Obviously, it being prohibited, they just don't have access to it, the citizen. But then you start thinking of how, I guess, freedom starts with these. Well, it starts with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about being founded on the idea of freedom and liberty as a nation, but that little spark that where people see, well, wait a minute, this is the life that other people have. They're generally aware of it. But when you start seeing details and examples, maybe on a story or whatever it might be, whatever kind of data might be on this jump drive that somebody has, that becomes significant because it starts this emotional response. It starts, again, that passion in that person to say, wait a minute, we need to, you know, this shouldn't be this way. This is wrong. We are held as prisoners, as citizens of North Korea. And I look at it as fascinating, because back in the day, propaganda would have been, you know, pamphlet books, maybe videos later. My CIA friend, I don't know if it was VHS or DVDs. I didn't ask. But a jump drive, it's tiny. It's concealable.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
And it can contain a ton of data, of information, depending on the size of the jump drive.
And by just looking at it, you don't know what's in it.
Right. Exactly.
I remember when my history teacher told me that in 10th grade, that they used to bring over U.S. News and World Report, especially because you could roll up magazines. So news magazines were actually wanted more than newspapers because they were easy to pack. And for some reason, he said he couldn't believe how many times he got over with how many magazines. Because still, even when he went to the Soviet Union on the education, exchanges, whatever they were, they just, because they were teachers or, you know, they were from education, that the KGB would just, you know, they'd look at the magazines, okay, fine, because they would look at them as more of education materials, and they gave them directly to these other people that wanted to know what was going on. But then I've told the story of my old young friend, and I say old young friend because I haven't seen her in a long time, but she was a waitress at a restaurant that I went to. And this goes back to protest in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
When that happened, what was that, 10 years ago now?
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years ago?
Wow.
And somebody told me that this young woman was from Iran. And it was interesting. I said, well, maybe I'll just, you know, strike up a conversation. And we talked for really the next couple of years, and I asked her direct questions, and I'll never forget sitting down with her the one time, and I said, well, I got to ask you, because her goal was to become a citizen of the United States, which she did become. And she had her grandparents over here, and there was a limited time, though, that she was allowed to come over, and she had to make the decision, and other relatives of hers did not make the same decision. Her sister didn't make the same decision. Her sister couldn't come over because there was a time period in immigration law at that time. I don't know what it would be now if you tried to come over. But so she came over by herself, never had met her grandparents, so didn't know anybody, but still was allowed to come over. And when I asked her, I said, why'd you come over? She said, because it's the United States. And I said, well, you and your friends didn't hate the United States? She goes, no, we love the United States.
Hmm.
I said, so you basically knew that, you, I said, and she just looked at me, she said, look, the problem is my stupid government and my stupid religion. Our stupid, government and our stupid religion. And I asked her what she wanted. At that time, she was in her early 20s. She'd come over at 18, but she was probably here 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And it was what she stated. Because I'm thinking, well, what I want to do is get away from a totalitarian government. And I wish to live in a democratic republic where the representatives, and she said, I want to be able to dance. I want to listen to the music that I want to listen to. I want to be able to read what I want to read. I want to be able to go out and dance. I want to be able to be in a swimming pool with boys. And I went, swimming pool with boys? That seems strange. Well, there, you're completely segregated.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Boys swim in one pool, girls swim in another. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, who cares about swimming?
Right.
That
was
my thing. It's
exactly.
Because you have to understand, we're segregated. And I realized she wanted what any 20-year-old wants.
Sure.
Which is basically stay out of my face.
Mm-hmm.
As I've said, is really what the founding fathers, that's what they were about. Stay out of my face. Leave me alone. But she knew. And she said, we all know. She said, we all know it's not the United States' fault. I said, how do you know? She goes, the internet. I said, well, isn't part of it blocked? She goes, we get around it.
So there was a death camp survivor, according to this story in the Washington Examiner, named Jung Gwang Il. He defected North Korea, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a defector. He goes to Canada. He went to a university campus for help because it was his idea for these jump drives, right? And they started this collection on the campus. And some of the boxes had posters or a picture of Kim Jong-un. And instead of his mouth, it was a jump. It was a USB port, right, on the poster. So the idea was, obviously, let's get this. It can be great propaganda. They write about East Germany, West Germany. Well, you couldn't stop the broadcast TV from getting over.
No, you couldn't. No.
Right? And so broadcast became a big part of it. But here, it's easily concealable. so much data can be on there. So they started this. In fact, there was a human rights activist, Thor Halvorsen, who was a supporter of Zhong Guangil and his efforts. And he leads Flash Drives for Freedom. And so it's a campaign just basically asks people around the world to donate your USB flash drive.
How did they get him in?
Well,
that would be my question.
They're smuggling them in, and they say, in fact, that Human Rights Foundation has funded individuals and groups in South Korea to smuggle in more than 100,000 flash drives and computer memory cards. That's the other part of it, the memory cards, into North Korea, reaching 1.3 million citizens. But logistically, it doesn't really talk about that. They're getting them in. Somehow they're getting them in.
And there it is. I just put into Google, how are flash drives smuggling in North Korea? First thing that comes up, flash drives for freedom.
Yeah.
Aims to fill your spare USA drives with subversive media and information and smuggle them in.
Right. I remember going back to, I forget who, I think it could have been Neil deGrasse Tyson or somebody else that said, the most important thing we have as a universe, keep in mind the source, is information, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember scientists saying this, well, it's all about information. It's all about information, all about information. Not just what you can learn from. I mean, it's for them, and they're much smarter than I am. They can explain it more, but I've always kept that in the back of my mind. Everything, information is paramount. And of course, as they say here, one of the quotes here, knowledge is power. Information is power. Of course, we knew that. We are a nation founded on an idea. Liberty. So when you think of that, think about how powerful ideas can be.
But none
is more powerful than the idea and all of the ideas surrounding freedom, liberty, for anyone. It's what we all want.
A majority of North Koreans have access to devices that can read USB drives. That's what they say.
Yeah.
So,
which is interesting. I don't know what kind of devices they would be, but they have them. Mm-hmm. So,
contents include e-books, films, and an offline Korean Wikipedia.
Right. So you're building this demand, which cannot necessarily be supplied enough. Right. You build that demand. You built that longing for that whatever it is, whatever you're getting, that information. And that changes hearts and minds. Obviously, can't measure to what extent, but imagine being able to go back and the movies, if there is to be a free North Korea at some point in our lifetime, I have my doubts about that. But if that ever happens, going back to the infancy and something like this, an effort where you're just smuggling in this kind of data in this way.
And it's the story is flash drives are bringing freedom to North Korea a few gigabytes at a time,
yeah.
Washington Examiner.
Yeah.
So 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. And finally for this segment, I mean, things are so insane. You heard about the Boston Straight Pride Parade, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you hear who the Grand Marshal's going to be? Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yeah, all right.
He's gay.
Yeah.
So the Grand Marshal of the Straight Pride Parade in Boston is gay.
All right.
I don't have much more to say than that. And, you know, that's,
there you have it.
it sort of fits with all the different stories that we do every day, doesn't it?
I think so.
It's sort of, that's just about right.
Oh, man, the Babylon Bee. Oh, my gosh. I think this is an older story. Let's see if I can get the headline, or I'll get it coming up, about, you know, and it's about Gay Pride Month and talking about the corporations. Oh, here we go. Oh, my gosh. Here's the headline, Babylon Bee. When did this? I thought I'd seen this before. I don't see a dateline on it, though. Oh, wait, there it is. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, June 3rd, so it's days old, but major corporations bravely come out in support of incredibly popular, socially acceptable movement. Oh my gosh, it is so. What's so funny is that they're only telling the truth in that line.
Well, Milo, who was gay, said this: I've spent my entire career advocating for the rights of America's most brutally repressed identity, straight people.
Yeah, right. The greatest spokesperson is Milo. Here is your forecast.
We're not looking for the real oppressive heat to start the work week for a good portion of the country. Your usual suspects seeing some 100-plus readings: Phoenix, southern Texas, most of the central U.S., the mid-Atlantic, and the northeast will be in the pleasant range of the mid-70s to near 80. We've been focused on the heartland, where flooding for several months has forced many farmers to not even plant their crop this year. We'll see that flooding continue down through the Mississippi and portions of the Arkansas River for the next several days. Mountain creeks and streams will be running very high over the next few weeks due to warmer temperatures and increased snowmelt runoff in the Rockies, Sierras, Cascades, and most of the western mountain slopes. You could see spotty showers today in western Texas into New Mexico on I-10. Spotty showers up and down the I-95 corridor. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Pockets of Civilization. You can listen live on our app, in your app store, or RedEyeRadioShow.com. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carney. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. The show doesn't begin for another 25 minutes, because that's when I plan on getting coffee. Because yeah. All the lights are back right on. We had lost power because of the storms here in the Dallas area yesterday, out for really about 13 hours.
Right. Yeah.
Now, we had the backup generator was working, so we were able to broadcast from the studio and all that, but the coffee machine was out.
Yeah, Eric, I went out and made mine.
When I walked in, Eric said, should I bring the coffee machine into the studio?
Right, nah, we have power in here, yeah.
We can go without it that long.
Yeah, so
so coffee coming up here at the top of the hour. I'm looking forward to it. It's like, wow, this is really going to be great.
Right.
I have something to look forward to besides the show, besides right. The insanity of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you ready for this new poll out? No, not the poll on the Democrats.
No?
I just love, though, how... Just love how the mayor of New York has zero.
Bill de Blasio is at zero.
How can de Blasio have zero? I know this. I'm sorry. I got off this other poll for a second. But de Blasio in Iowa has zero.
You know, I thought about this. There was a story. I forget who had it. The Hill or Bloomberg or somebody. There were people, very wealthy individuals, that have donated to some of his items along the way as mayor, right? And they asked them, are you going to be a supporter for president? And they were like, no. I didn't even know that I gave the $5,000 for this or that. Well, I'm wondering with the liberals right now, a number of them, look, you're useful here. We need you here as, you know, mayor. We need AOC to represent her district. We don't want them to be president ever. Right? I have to believe that, some of that is in effect.
All of that for de Blasio.
Well, that's a fair point. It would be 100% of that. because
are you saying,
the presidential side, it would be zero.
Are you saying that 100% of the Democrats are stating New York really, really needs de Blasio? He's wrong. He needs to be there to save New York.
Well, no, I think it's like get the agenda done in New York City. Go,
oh, okay.
You stay there.
Right. Okay.
Get the agenda done there. Don't get out of your wheelhouse. 100% of the Democrats.
But you and I had said, because he was so late into it. He was so late into it where we said he probably thinks he's going to make this big splash.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's probably waiting. Okay. And he's talking to his advisors. When's the time? All right. Now you get in there and now you're going to make an impact.
Like everybody was going to go, oh my goodness, we didn't know he was going to run. We're going to give him. He had to have believed that.
He had to believe. Look, he had to believe more than, by the time it comes around to when all the candidates go and visit Iowa and they take the latest poll, I will have a healthy zero.
Yeah.
Because the thing, here's the thing. He has name recognition alone should give him five.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because I guarantee most Americans will go down and they will read half of the Democratic candidates and say, who, never heard of him, never heard of him. Oh, de Blasio, yeah, governor of New York.
Yeah, right. Or mayor.
I'm governor of New York. Sorry, I've promoted him already. Governor of New York.
Maybe next, who knows?
I am sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Cuomo. Thank you for correcting me. Well, I'll get that same troll guy bothering me. You're embarrassing yourself. You just called de Blasio the governor of New York.
Yeah, yeah. Have you heard the show? But I do wonder, though, again, I mean, it really gets back to, like, the star power, right? Where is the star power on the left? Ocasio-Cortez, because the left media is really obsessed with her, right? I don't know if you saw the exchange on domestic terrorism when she was asking a top level official from the FBI and blanking on his name about domestic terrorism. Why weren't they charged with domestic terrorism? We don't have that statute.
The law doesn't exist.
Right. And had to repeat himself a couple of times. Apparently she wasn't getting it. But the media has been all over the place because there's the other thing. Who do you endorse? How do you endorse anyone or anything on the left right now without knowing that it's just a matter of seconds, relatively, when you're going to get shamed for doing that? I don't care what it is. With the exception right now, probably of abortion. Right?
That's it?
That's it. So what other ideas, campaigns, movements are really endorsed wholeheartedly? Where do you see the energy going? The leftist media will go out and report on each of the individual ones and give them all, I don't know, props. Kids still use the word props. But they don't. There isn't this huge groundswell, this energy behind any one movement or candidate. Again, Elizabeth Warren is on the uptick in the polls. Buttigieg is, you have Biden and Bernie on the way down. But that will change. All of that will change. Because the sentiment has changed since the last presidential election season. We talked about it in 2016. You know, it's ever changing. whatever is hip today or whatever is the oppressor today or whatever, whoever the ally is today is the oppressor tomorrow. And that's the way it works on the left. It doesn't matter. You can be at the top right now, regardless of who you are, and by the end of the summer, be totally gone.
Here we go. Harvard-Harris poll. This is the poll that I wanted to throw in. This isn't the
Democratic poll.
This isn't the poll on socialism, and this isn't the Democratic poll in Iowa. But this does relate to what we were just talking about. Over the Overlook poll, 60% of voters find Democratic field of presidential candidates underwhelming, despite boasting a field of more than two dozen candidates for the 2020 Democratic presidential nominee. The most recent Harvard-Harris poll shows that 6 out of 10 voters find the slate of choices to defeat President Donald Trump to be underwhelming. That means out of the 23, is there now? Out of the total of 23?
Right. Yeah.
They're all underwhelming. That's 6 out of 10 voters. The poll conducted within the United States from May 29th to May 30th among 1,295 registered voters found that just 40% of American voters find that the Democratic option so far to be impressive. 60% answered underwhelming during this survey. Who do they think could beat Donald Trump? 35% said Joe Biden has the best chance. The choices offered in this question included Hillary Clinton, the former party nominee and 2016 election loser, polled at what? How many percentage of registered voters believed that, now 35% believed that Biden could beat. How many believed that Clinton could beat Trump?
I'm going to go 15.
4%.
Oh my gosh, really?
Still,
wow.
Still, though, she performed better than Senator Kamala Harris and Senator Elizabeth Warren, who each earned 3% of the best chance. Bernie Sanders came in second place with 11% of the voters believing that the Democratic Socialist was the top choice who could most likely prevent the reelection of Donald Trump. Then again, you've said this just an excitement level yourself. Yeah. When you look at it, and by the way, there was a ton of stories written about Iowa and how quiet some of the rallies were. There. But when you think of whatever you think of Donald Trump, okay, whether you like him or whether you dislike him, whether you like him greatly or hate him, whether you're in the middle, where you say I can't stand the guy's personality, but he seems to be doing a pretty good job. There is no, you think about the media monster that he is, how dominant in control of the media narrative, how still today, Eric, everybody pays attention, and the Democrats are obsessed with paying attention still to every single tweet, every single comment, every single thing that they take out of context about him, that they feel the necessity to do so. Nobody, how do you reach that status if you're a Democrat? How do you reach that? When 60% of voters say you're underwhelming, because there is going to be no type of personality, no type of aura that's going to come close to and I'm sitting in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm like holding both my hands up. It's like I've got Trump's head here, the head, and it's a huge head. I'm thinking, and I'm not saying this in an insulting way. I'm just saying it's a huge dominant label of a personality, and I see his face and I see his head.
Massive persona,
and everybody else is down here.
Yes.
Whether you like him or not, you have to admit, politically, that's the case right now.
Yes.
And that's a huge thing for any Democrat to overcome.
And I think, again, it really hit me with the Panama City Beach, Florida rally a few weeks ago. Because the next day, the president posted the video of it on Twitter, the official video of it, and it was like the entire rally. And I don't know that I've ever seen an entire rally, watched it. And I did. I was doing some other things, and I thought, no, I'll just pop this up full screen and check it out. The energy was incredible. And I thought, Where is that on the left?
And the reason I say this is even in Obama in his third year, the excitement still wasn't the same. You didn't have that incredible homage that you had, the political idolatry
right.
that existed. The political idolatry for Trump is still there. You just read the people that support him without
yeah.
question on social right. media this past weekend.
That's a driver.
On the Mexican deal. I mean, they're lockstep behind him no matter what. And as we said, do you remember what he really said 10 days ago? The tariffs go on unless immigration stops. Yeah, he was moving in generally the right direction on Friday, but as soon as he saw the economic numbers, okay, we got a deal. But the deal was nowhere near what he promised. Didn't matter to his followers.
Mm-hmm.
He's moving in the right direction. That's all that matters. They know that nobody else, no matter whether he oversells his promises, they still know. Ann Coulter faction besides, but I bet you Ann Coulter votes for him again.
I'm guessing, unless she does this
right.
whole stay home thing, I don't know.
But no matter what, even if he oversells something, the people look at it and say, "Yeah, but still, nobody's close to. At least we know what direction he's trying to move in. He might have oversold it, but we know who else will move in this direction. Any Democrat? No. Okay, so it doesn't matter. Got to support him. Boom, he's got my vote.
Yeah, right."
That's just the reality of what we're doing. Because everybody else on that side, look, and we've said this before, and I don't mean it to be over-the-top rhetoric. But when you look at it, and when Biden gave up on the Hyde Amendment, it showed everybody's now a radical.
Yes.
And the positions that they hold from the Green New Deal to open borders, the majority of Americans look at and say, these people are nuts. And their ideas are crazy.
And they won't become centered after the convention.
I don't believe they can.
No.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
All right, now I can start doing the radio show.
Now we can get some coffee at the top of the hour.
I got it.
I got it now.
I got it during the quick break there. I ran out.
All right.
Can't hold off any longer. Mm-hmm. For those of you just tuning in right now, we had storms move through the Dallas area yesterday, and we were without power. Our studios, we have a backup generator, so our studios right. were, but the whole place was just pitch black, and I had forgotten. I knew before I left that, you know, the power was out.
Right.
And for some reason, I thought, oh, the coffee machine's working. It's not hooked up. And so we just got coffee right now. The power came out about a half hour ago. So
yeah,
we have coffee. And so we're all set to go.
We do.
And coming up following the top of the hour, this is really interesting. A new poll out there. 55% of women prefer socialism. Women, are you dooming us?
Yeah.
Women, are you dooming us to socialism?
Well, the problem is, Gary, is they listen to their husbands and boyfriends and sons and vote like they do. I mean, if you're to believe Hillary Clinton, right?
Well, what do you think? What do you find out what people think socialism is? Coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.